This teen is killing at fast rate. It's destroying our families. This violence against women is sickening. And it's growing into the blood cells of young men of this nation. And to me, I feel saddened. For me, I see that this death of General Kennedy is a litmus test, not only for the police, but the nation.
That's Elizabeth Bradshaw, the aunt of Jenlyn Kennedy, the young woman who died last week in Papua New Guinea in the latest high-profile case of domestic violence. Since Jenlyn's death, people in the country have been speaking out, and that's because estimates from the UN say two-thirds of women in Papua New Guinea suffer domestic abuse. PNG, of course, is not alone. Here in Australia, police deal with 5,000 domestic violence matters on average every week. That's one every 2 minutes. And just as in PNG, Australians have been forced to take a look at their actions and work out how to deal with the issue. Laws can be changed, but advocates say a lot of it starts with simple conversations. And that's what the people of PNG have been doing for the past few weeks, from family members of victims all the way up to the Prime Minister, James Marape. They're wanting an end to the silence and to stop the violence. Very soon, three guests will join me to talk about this very important issue in Papua New Guinea, and I want you to join me too. At any time, you can send me a message on our ABC Radio Australia Facebook page. We'll share your views on air and we'd really value your input. This is Pacific Beat. My name is Marla Damati.
You're listening to Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
The government needs to change the policy. I mean, a lot of the policies are already in place, but they are not very strong enough.
I think we need to have the conversation more. I think it needs to be visible. I think it needs to be talked about at all levels, at home, at community, at family.
You know, more advocates, more people talking about this thing. We'll get the message out.
I never eat there. Because I know that the moment if I eat there, then it will be unstoppable for me.
The parliament has to call up parliamentary committee meeting ASAP and pass the bills.
And there is one thing that I see that seems to take upper hand is the culture and the custom tradition of our people.
A culture, a lot of people need guidance. A lot of people need a lot of help. We need to get to a place where in a relationship people start learning about this early, what's accepted, what's not right.
We have nearly 800 tribes and cultures, and most of them don't. They think that, you know, ladies, men are superior. That mindset has to change.
If I can make that move, then most of my brothers out there can also do that. It's just a matter of you accepting the fact that the reality that is happening, and not the consequences might happen if you decide to do the wrong move or the right move.
Enough is enough, you know. For every man that you're on this earth, you know, you came out from a woman, and you have to respect that.
Here on Pacific Beat, we invited you to share your thoughts on about what needs to change. What we just heard were some of the views that were shared with us. Thank you to those who have done so, and don't forget that you can too. Send a message to our ABC Radio Australia page and we will share those views on this special program. Or perhaps you have a question for one of our panelists, who you'll meet in just a moment. I'm Marla Damati and this is our special edition of Pacific Beat.
Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
You may have been wondering who we have today to talk with us and to take a look at domestic violence in PNG. Well, I'm excited for you to meet them now. We have Eddie Isla, who is the founder of the group Warrior Culture PNG, and he's also a former PNG rugby player who played in the 2000 World Cup. Good morning, Eddie.
Morning, Marla.
We also have Tanya Nugent in Port Moresby. Her name is well known in PNG and across the Pacific. She's been in the media industry for 30 years now and is a domestic violence advocate and has her own stories to share too. Tanya, great to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
And Alex Rue, who works in aviation in PNG, flying into rural parts of the country. And this week, a post she shared on social media about domestic violence went viral. And she joins us now from Lae in PNG. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Now, let's start with you, Tanya. You went to the March for Jenlyn Kennedy yesterday, and then, like many others, watched the vigil online last night. Look, emotionally, it's been a hard issue, but it is a very important one. How are you feeling after what you've seen?
I'm feeling optimistic, particularly after watching the vigil last night. I found it very moving. Finally starting to hear the kinds of things that many of us have been wanting to hear for a long time from parts of the population that have for decades been kind of just bystanders, quite quiet in this. It's normally women's groups that are out there speaking up for other women. But last night in Port Moresby, we saw a very powerful display of what feels like a shift now, where the men are starting to step up and own this problem.
Now, it seems this tragedy has prompted many others to speak out. Alex, you shared a post earlier this week that went viral in PNG. It was a detailed personal story from a survivor of domestic violence. Why did you share her story? And furthermore, were you surprised by the responses?
Sorry, you're breaking up. I can't really hear you there.
That's all right. I might just say it again. Alex, you shared a post earlier this week that went viral in PNG, and, you know, it was a personal story from a survivor of DV. Why did you share her story? And, you know, were you surprised by the responses you got to it?
So I had shared a story that from a victim of domestic violence that she suffered torture at the hands of her partner. And she was very, very, very tired seeing how many more women have to go through this and how many more have to die before attention goes onto them. So, yeah, I share that story. And to my surprise, there were so many women that came forth, messaged and spoke of their stories as well. And sisters of victims that came forth and were talking about how they feel like they should play a part in pulling their sisters out, or even daughters of victims came forth and were talking about their mother's experience and their trauma that they're going through. So, yeah, it was an eye-opener for me to see how many women are literally suffering in silence.
Now, Eddie, your own experience with domestic violence has also shaped the way that you look at the issue. You publicly admit that you were once a perpetrator of abuse in your relationship. Can you share with us a little bit more about that, and what triggered you or what made you want to change your behaviour?
Yeah, sure. I think basically I was living out the beliefs that I knew, and I was doing what I knew in terms of how to react when you are emotionally stressed when I was perpetrating. So, and I did that for a very long time, up until about 8 years ago when my then partner, who I was violent with, left. And even though I was perpetrating, there was a lot of depression, there was a lot of substance abuse, alcohol, drugs, sexual promiscuity, infidelity in relationships and so forth. And what comes with that territory is a lot of deep depression and self-judgment. And it was only when my then partner left and never came back that I was forced to kind of look at myself. And I guess I didn't want to, it was too painful to keep going. So at that point, I made a decision after many years of pain to, you know, I've got to change something, or else I'll probably end up dying or something bad's going to happen.
Now, when you were in this relationship, did you know that what you were doing was wrong? And, you know, I just wanted to point out, William has commented on our ABC Radio Australia Facebook page saying, no amount of coaching can change the mindset of a serial abuser. What do you say to that?
No, I think it really depends on what kind of coaching, and it depends on the person commentating, and people will always express the beliefs of their own experience. So if they haven't had the experience of, you know, their own belief shaking, then they won't believe in it. But, you know, there's a lot of the programs that we run, we do are similar to, you know, life coaches around the world, Anthony Robbins and these kinds of guys. are all testament that you can shift your beliefs. And so we show men how to do that. We show women how to do that. And basically it happens at a subconscious level. So simply, I guess, taking part in a march or telling someone you need to change or pointing fingers, or, you know, TV ad campaigns, they're all good, but they don't actually shift an individual's belief. It's got to take place at a subconscious level. Now, that requires, discussions and sessions with people who are trained, psychologists, psychiatrists, neuro-linguistic programming coaches and so forth, and people in the field who are able to facilitate a person accessing their subconscious beliefs and then shifting them. But it's definitely a delicate process, and it can't be changed in the conscious mind. So I would agree with that commentator if they're saying that.
Now, Tanya, I just want to ask you, what do you think about what Eddie has said? What is your response to that?
I agree that there is that change can happen. There's a lot of people that are just saying, let's just focus on the kids, you know, the younger generation, because, you know, the older people that are perpetrating, you know, they're lost causes, for want of a better description. But I honestly think that, Eddie himself is a living testimony to that our men can change. He's got powerful experience to share, and we need more of that happening. We need more of those kinds of stories to come out, because I just think we can't just go around and arrest everybody that's doing this, because we'll have no one left walking around on the streets. Because when you look at the stats, that's what it shows, is the level is so high and it's so widespread. So we need to look at ways that we can help our men. We need to turn that around.
This is Pacific Beat. I am Mala Damati. You're listening to a special panel on domestic violence in PNG. Here with me are Tanya Nugent, Alex Rowe and Eddie Ayla. Now, what needs to be done in PNG to stop domestic violence? Let's hear one listener, Hoge's, response to that question.
I don't think we're doing much about prevention is better than cure. The message, I believe, is not getting across to the people, especially men and boys, and even women too. Prevention is better than cure. We need to have materials that we can materialize, like the language that can be printed on posters or even video clips, people talking about violence in their own local language that can be brought out into rural areas.
Prevention is better than cure is what he was saying. What do you think, Alex? Does more work need to be done, particularly in rural areas? I know that you're a pilot, and I understand that during one of your medivacs to attend to a mother in a village, you came face to face with how domestic violence is normalized in some rural communities in PNG.
Sorry, could you please repeat that again?
No worries, Alex. Do you think more needs to be done, particularly in rural areas?
Is domestic violence normalized in rural areas?
Yes.
Yes, it is way beyond normalized in rural areas. There was a particular case that we had where, or a story that was shared when we had gone to this rural village in Morobe called Etep, and we had seen a guy that got his hand sliced off, and the doctor had explained to us that he got his hand sliced off because the teacher in the school his daughter was at had proposed to his daughter and had told her that he would pay for her and she would be his. So the daughter had gone and told the father, and the father was upset about it, so he went to confront the teacher, and the teacher had sliced his hand up, and not much help was given. People normalized it, and the villagers even went saying, you know, oh, he said that he was going to pay for your daughter. Why are you coming? Like, why are you trying to confront him like this? You know, he had every right to say this to your daughter. And so, yeah, and he got very little help. There was only one or two guys that had brought him to the hospital after that.
Now, Eddie, you started the organization Warrior Culture to empower men to overcome family violence. And what we've just heard from Alex there, it sounds like, you know, last night's vigil was organized by men and that is being described as historic. But Eddie, what do you think it's important to involve men in these conversations? Do they have a role here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, as Tanya said, and as many others have also said, I think men perpetrate the most physical violence. And so they have a massive role to play. And when men lead with the conversation, other men are more inclined to listen rather than if a female points at a man, it tends to get defensive and so forth. So, you know, I think down in Australia, we've got Men Shed and a couple of other groups like that where, you know, men typically listen more to each other. So we have a massive role to play. And it's good that the general public are leading it rather than, like males from the general public, rather than, you know, waiting for government or other organizations to lead. So, yeah, it's really important, you know, in families, in teams, at the workplace. It's important that men are leading, and it's really good to see.
Talking about community responses, we're talking about domestic violence here today because of two very high-profile cases in PNG. But, of course, the issue is not new, and we've had strong community responses every few years. Now, Tanya, do you feel like any progress has been made? And in your own experience of the system, what works and what doesn't?
Well, I mean, in the context, I think we've gone backwards in the context of, you know, how long I myself personally have been involved in one way or another with this issue in my country. It's certainly at a point where, you know, when we start seeing videos of men pummeling the heads of their partners with hot irons, and then the horrific account from the doctor at the Port Moresby General Hospital comes out about the case of Jenilyn, I sort of feel like, you know, if we don't fix this now, this is where we just get used to it, people, because we're just going to see more of it. So definitely I don't think it's getting better at all. And I just think it's now or never.
Tanya, are you optimistic that change can happen, though?
Yes.
Now, Alex, I want to talk to you. You are a young woman in this space. How do you feel as a young woman looking at this issue? And to your experiences, how important is education in the, you know, early levels in terms of dealing with this? Alex, can you hear me there? I'm just going to throw the question to everyone. What is your thoughts on education and how important a role it plays in looking at these issues?
I'll answer if you want, Tanya. Yeah, education, I think early childhood education is important because from a psychological point of view, that's when beliefs are formed, typically between 0 to 7 years old. So, you know, early education is really important. In terms of our education system, there's not enough focus on developing emotional intelligence, discussing family violence. In the next 7 years of belief development, when young individuals are at school and so forth, and they're seeking evidence of others demonstrating the beliefs they've formed, you know, we need more education there. I think the education system, well, there's so many factors. It's education, it's poverty, it's a lack of policing, it's government funding, it's culture, it's corruption. And all of these aspects sort of contribute to this issue, and education is only one aspect that needs to be changed. Everything needs to be changed, really.
Alex, I want to go back to you because you are a young woman looking at this issue. What are your experiences in navigating this space?
I honestly believe that it starts with youth, and it starts with holding us and our own family members and friends accountable. It really starts with that, because if we're not able to hold the people close to us accountable, how does that stop at all? It can't just be people outside of your circle calling them out. It has to be you having an honest conversation with people close to you, because I believe that friends do listen to friends, and you as a mate or someone does have a huge impact. So, yeah, I honestly believe that it starts within your own homes and it slowly goes out. It has to start in your homes and in your friend groups.
Alex, that involves speaking out. What do you think of the culture of being able to speak out against these stuff and speak to your elders and, you know, in this kind of cultural context?
Speaking to your elders, it's a bit tough when, especially when your elders think that what they're doing is right. It's a bit tough there, because I've experienced when I've stopped, I've come between fights of elders, and they've told me to go away because I was too young and I didn't know what I was doing, and they had the right and I should be respectful to them. So, yeah, it's a bit tough when it comes to speaking to elders. I would only know when it comes to holding your friend groups accountable, because that's what I've gone through, and people do listen when you talk.
This is Pacific Beat. I'm Marla Damati. You're listening to a special panel on domestic violence in PNG. Here with me are Tanya Nugent, Alex Rue and Eddie Ayla. Now, Eddie, I want to play you a little bit of a small business owner from Port Moresby talking about PNG's particular challenge when it comes to domestic abuse.
It's very common in Papua New Guinea. And I've seen a lot of women being bashed up by their husband. And the men, they think that they own on the ladies, and they can do anything they want to do. And I've talked to a lot of women who are victims. And I'm a mother myself. I've got daughters, and that is not right. I think this is definitely it is not right, and it has to be addressed ASAP.
That was Lucy speaking there. Now, Eddie, what do you have to say to this? Does culture and tradition have a role to play in what we are seeing in PNG?
Yeah, definitely. If I can just say that not all men think like that, but her view is definitely prevalent throughout Papua New Guinea. I think culture, things like bride price have been used by many men to use their power and influence and say, you know, because I've paid bride price, now I own you, things like that. And, just beliefs over time that men are superior and so forth. So I think it's definitely played a part, as well as all the other factors that I mentioned, and sort of combined together, it's a, you know, quite a deadly combination of factors.
Tanya, you work in the media industry, and we're seeing now that social media is playing an incredibly key role when it comes to this issue. People are now more openly sharing their stories, but also filming the violence and sharing that as well. And that was the case with Debbie Kare. Are you seeing social media as helping drive the conversation on this issue and highlighting what's actually going on?
Yeah. Definitely. It's social media has, if you go and talk to people like Ruth Kissam and Tessie Soy and Fiona Hukala, that these people who have been working up in so many decades in this space, this the things that we're seeing, they already know, but now the rest of us are starting to see. What it's also revealing is the mindset of our population, just how prevalent the ways of thinking are, specifically around what the things that Eddie touched on around property, own that woman, bride price. But it's just so overwhelming that there is a huge portion of the population in Papua New Guinea of men.
Sorry, Tanya, I think we've lost you there. I'm going to go to Alex now. Now, Alex, of course, it was your viral post on Facebook that got so many others to talk about their own experiences of domestic violence. Do you think it's important for victims of abuse to be able to share their experience and overcome the stigma that may surround the issue, as well as creating a safe space to share their thoughts and their feelings?
Definitely, definitely. I feel as though sometimes it's harder for victims to share their stories because they've been conditioned to think that their stories don't matter and their voices should not be heard. So I feel like it also gives some sort of healing to the victim themselves when they speak of their stories and they know that there's a space held for them to be heard. And, you know, I feel like it also gives them power when they know that because of them, other women are coming out and speaking. And yeah, it's just really powerful when you see that a part of them has healed because of them coming out and people holding space to listen and support them.
Now we've
posting. The other part about posting, sorry, is that a lot of women say I had to post for my own safety. They once it's made public, then they know that people are aware. That's been a frequent reason for women posting, because when they make it public, everybody knows about it now, so everybody's watching. And that's a powerful message that we should, you know, take note of, because basically what that's saying is that if you keep it a secret, you're vulnerable. And if you bring it out into the open, you know, society here will have your back. I mean, well, not that's not always the case. As we saw in Janelin's case, people knew in plain sight what was going on. And that's a big call that we need to make for people to just be able to speak without fear.
Tanya, I want to ask as well, though, when people are posting about their experiences on social media, there is also the risk of other people from that organization or from the perpetrators coming and also continually attacking you and making the situation also unsafe. So what do you say to that?
Well, first of all, it does take a lot of courage to post what's happened to you. And so those women don't do it lightly. They do it out of as a last resort. So at that point, they may have considered the backlash, but they where the position they're in now is worse. So they'll just take that risk and do it. Yeah, and we just need to be vigilant and get behind those people, keep an eye out for them, and keep the pathways open so that they can always feel that they can speak without fear.
Now, we've talked a lot today about the challenges that is faced, but now let's turn to some solutions. I want to start with you, Eddie. Are there solutions that already exist, and where do you think people should go if they are experiencing violence, either as a victim or a perpetrator?
Yeah, there's a number of solutions. There's counselling hotlines, there's safe houses, but as was found out with the recent incident, some of the safe houses, I guess there's some flaws in the setup in the system. So we do counselling programs. There's other counsellors around. The challenges, and then there's the family sexual violence unit with the police, but also with them there was some, I guess, flaws in terms of their processes and so forth. So there are solutions around. One thing is, if someone is perpetrating and they haven't been locked up or arrested or anything like that, but they, someone wants help, we can't force them. They've got to come by their own accord, and we typically don't know the full circumstances with people who are perpetrating. So when we help men, it really depends on them coming forward and seeking help. But, you know, in terms of counselling and so forth, that's available with us and with other. There's quite a few counselling resources around.
Now, Tanya, we've heard of many women fleeing violent partners, not just to other parts of PNG, but also some do try to come to Australia as well, seeking asylum. Now, many also don't because they can't take their children with them. So do you think that's an area of law that does need to change?
Well, yes, this is something that is a big factor for a lot of women that stay in violent homes because, you know, as always is the case when these cases come out in the public, people are like, why didn't she, you know, she should have just left, you know, why did she stay, why did she stay? But they stay because it's much more difficult for a woman to move with her kids if she's in a really violent place. When you're trying to escape, that's when the violence increases. So, you know, there was a very sad account from a young male who shared on a Facebook group of his mother's story. She had tried to escape. She had to make the decision of leaving her children behind and going. She got all the way from their village somewhere in the Highlands to Goroka, and she was just about to get on that last bus to the coast and freedom. And she thought of her kids and turned around and went straight back into the fire and never, ever ended up escaping ever again. So there needs to be some attention paid to that. Jenilyn was in the same situation from the stories that have come out from her family, that she, it was the kids that kept drawing her back into that situation. So I don't know what, you know, I'm not the expert on what to do. This is just stuff that I'm observing that I see is preventing women from getting out of harm, and they're getting their kids out of harm. Like, let's remember, Eddie touched on education earlier, early childhood education, and so did Lexi, talking about how it starts in the home, and that the first teachers are your parents. And I think that we need to really, really amp up the awareness around parenting and make more and more people aware of, you know, that they might not think their kids are taking it in, but my goodness, they are.
Now, finally, I want to go to you, Alex. The Prime Minister, James Marape, last night talked about how people who stand by watching violence and don't report it are equally culpable. And on the ABC Radio Australia Facebook page, somebody told us that he thinks it's bystander culture that really separates PNG from other nations. So, Alex, do you think people should be intervening? And can people change that behaviour and end their silence?
Definitely, definitely. I feel like if we collectively come together to intervene, the perpetrator has no choice but to let go. And that is what needs to happen. Bystander culture needs to be cancelled. Women need to know that they're safe in their home and outside of their home. And if you can't do it alone, grab a whole community with you and go and stop the perpetrator. Grab a whole community, grab groups, gather groups and go and stop. Because obviously, sometimes when you alone go and try to get in between what's happening, you could harm yourself or, yeah, could potentially harm yourself. So, honestly, I feel that people should come in groups and stop this violence. We can't do it alone. We have to all gather together and say, enough is enough. Stop this.
Thank you for that, Alex. That is all the time that we have for today's special panel on domestic violence in PNG, but we have only scratched the surface. Thank you so much to Alex, Tanya and Eddie for sharing your time and your insights with us.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, if anything you've heard on the show has affected you and you are seeking help, there is a phone line you can call in PNG. It's the One Talk Counseling Help'em line. That's 7150 8000, 7150 8000. And as we've discussed, some police stations in PNG do have a special family violence units, and that's where you can seek help as well.